Welcome to The Athlete Mindset, where we peel back the layers of triumph and trial to reveal the heart and soul behind the medals and the milestones. Together, we'll uncover the secrets of resilience, discipline, and the relentless pursuit of excellence that make not just great athletes, but extraordinary people.
Welcome to the Athlete Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Raymer, and today I am joined by the Sam Mack. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm glad to be here. I'm so excited for you to share your story and your mission, and I think you're going to change some lives, and I'm happy to be able to capture that. So,
thank you. I hope to.
Yes.
I hope to change some lives.
I think so. I can feel it.
Yeah, especially my fellow athletes.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's admirable for you to want to continue to help even after your journey as a professional coach, to want to give back and keep the momentum going. And it's like a community in itself, right?
Yeah. being a basketball player, it's a team concept. So you never leave that. Even when you're done playing, you always think of a team concept. Or even now, I still want to hang out with my boys, because that's what we were groomed to do. We're like robots, being around my team, like the military. You're around your comrades. So one for all for one.
So it's in your DNA.
Yeah, it's in my DNA. And I think about, what could I do to help others, help my other athletes get ahead? Because, not to jump ahead, but so many of us, we make a lot of mistakes and then we're ashamed. That's one of the biggest things. We're ashamed to talk about our mistakes, how we drop the ball.
Can I say that's part of that DNA where you have to be perfect and perform well consistently? So when you do something outside of that realm, it's, ooh, I'm not supposed to not do this well, because I do this great thing and I've accomplished these amazing things, right? It should be perfection almost.
It should be. At least you would want it to go that way, to
right.
Follow that path. But life is different.
Yes.
So many ups and down curves to it that you have to navigate how to recover.
Yep.
If we could basically focus a little bit more at our craft, even when we're done dribbling, throwing the baseball,
shooting threes,
done shooting threes, done catching the football, what's next? And I myself, several other athletes that I know, we're stuck in that phase of what to do.
Yeah, what to do next.
What to do next. And then you're constantly spending with nothing coming in.
Totally get it.
To secure your future, because, again, you're not making the same money.
Yeah.
Now you have to live off the money that you made if it's not invested. And most of us, 90% of us, don't invest the money. Let's be truth.
Yeah.
Let's speak truth. We don't invest the money because we're afraid, because we don't know what to invest in. We don't trust our advisors or the person that can give us the actual good advice. We're apprehensive.
So before you continue with these golden nuggets, let's give the audience an overview. Where are you from? Tell us a little bit about you and your journey into professional basketball.
I grew up here in the south suburbs of Chicago, Phoenix, village, little area, 9 blocks, as we say now. And right next to Harvey, Illinois, and in between South Holland. Grew up there, born and raised in a nice community. Everyone knows everybody. And that in itself, having that atmosphere of you can go outside back then and play. And if you do something, everyone on the block knew about it. And before you got home, your mom knows about it, what you did. So that was the kind of community that I grew up in, and it was great growing up. Then it catapulted me to playing sports, because that was all we did, played at the park. And that drove me into wanting to play basketball.
And where did you play for high school?
I went to Thorn Ridge High School in Dalton, Illinois.
Okay. And what was your experience? I always like to ask people that have been very successful in sports, what were some of the coaches in your life that were really good coaches? And did you ever experience a bad coach? And how did you continue your journey regardless of those people that really should be mentors that didn't do really what you thought they were going to do or support you in the way they should have?
The best way to say this is in junior high, we had a team that was really good. And we won 2 state championships in 7th and 8th grade. I was on the 7th grade team. On the 8th grade team, they kicked me off. And for some real, you know how kids, they see a bunch of chips in the room. So it was actually the captain of the team that had the key to the room. So he gave everyone the chips to eat before practice. But
oh my gosh,
I was the only one that got blamed. So
are you telling me they didn't let you play over a bag of Lay's potato chips?
No, seriously. They didn't let me play. And I harbored that for a long time, my eighth grade year, because I couldn't play with my friends. And so that my freshman year when I went to high school, I didn't play my freshman year. I was a swimmer, actually.
Wow.
And then my coach, and I give so much thanks to him, Rocky Hill. He's the coach at Thorn Ridge now. He coached at Thornton High School, different school, Bloom. And he saw me actually shooting basketball outside in the snow. He was coming from practice, and I was just outside. It wasn't a lot of snow. It just started snowing, but I was out there just shooting. He said, "Son, you got a good shot. I want you to play for me."
Cool.
And I thought, I didn't play freshman. I was on a swim team.
Yeah.
I'm not going to play basketball. But his drive, his coaching, his pushing me, because he saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. And that opened me up to hard work, because when I got to the team and tried out the sophomore year, I was good, but he didn't have trust in me on the court. But you have to gain trust with coaches. So the first 3/4 of the season, I was on the bench. Then we had a guy by the name of Frank Miller. Frank had got injured, and coach put me in, and I thrived. And from that point on, I had a burning desire to play basketball. And from there, graduated high school, went to college, played at Iowa State. Was supposed to go to the University of Michigan out of high school, but Glenn Rice was still there. He was a really good player, an All-American. And Bill Frieder told me that, "Son, I like your game. I want you to come, but you're going to sit on the bench, and I want you to play. You deserve to play." So he called his friend, Johnny Orr. And Johnny Orr gave me a scholarship on the spot, and I went to Iowa State, played there, got into a little trouble.
Okay.
Being a knucklehead, thinking that, as they say, your stuff don't stink. Got into some trouble and had to transfer, and Bill Frieder received me, opened up and accepted me at the other school. He had left University of Michigan and went to Arizona State. And at that time, I had a big trouble I was in. It was on all nation news. And end up almost having to serve 60 years in prison.
Wow.
But luckily, by the grace of God, everything worked out in my behalf. Was able to continue to go to school and turn my life around and play. So I ended up going to Arizona State at that time. Was going through school, dated a young female, and I was accused of rape. So I got in trouble there. I didn't get in trouble. Her boyfriend was head of Sigma Alpha Epsilon.
Okay. Oh, you're giving the tea right now. I'm so excited.
fraternity. Okay. So if you know that fraternity, that's one of the biggest.
Okay.
And he pushed for me to go get suspended from ASU or whatever. His father, I think, was the president, if I'm not mistaken, or something like that. And they wanted me, they were going to suspend me for 5 years from college, then allow me to come back. They wanted me to suspend me.
All because they didn't like you? Because of this girl?
Because of the girl. And it, it turned out that she ended up was dating several other players, and I passed the polygraph test. She refused to take it, and so that's how that case ended up turned out. But by that time, my name was splattered all across, and it looked like, okay, you're going from one place to another place. You got in trouble, so the I petitioned the NCAA, and back then, if you transfer from one school to another school, you have to sit out, and then you can't go back up to a Division I school. So we wrote the NCAA, explained my case, so they allowed me to go to junior college for 1 year. I would have to graduate, and then I could go to another D1 school. So that summer in 1990, I took classes in West Texas, Lubbock, Texas, graduated. I had to finish, take classes so I could, extra classes so I could graduate that year that would go with my classes in junior college so I could have enough credits to graduate. So I did that. Young coach by the name of Roy Thomas at a Tyler Junior College accepted me. I went there, played well, was the Eastern Conference Player of the Year, then ended up going to the University of Houston, played there, was Southwest Conference Player, Co-Player of the Year, and ended up going pro.
Wow. Can I just say the level of dedication to go through all of those ups and downs and the bad choices, the repercussions, the having to plead your case in writing, which I'm sure was a lot of pressure on you, because if they didn't accept that, where do you go? What happens next?
How did
you handle the pressure?
Prayer and having a God-fearing mother and her prayer friends. I call them the prayer choir, but they were godsend, and they got me through it. And to this day, I'm so thankful for my mother. She's 92, still alive.
Okay, I want to meet the prayer choir.
Yeah.
I want to meet the prayer choir. No, I need that energy in my life.
They do wonders for you. So that got me through, and was able to start my professional career, played 10 years in the NBA, the old NBA, not this new NBA.
So, yeah. And may I ask, how do you define the difference between when you played and now, old NBA and new? What really sets the two apart?
The physicality. Back then, we loved the game. They love the money now. We love the game. They love money. We want to play. We had to play. You had to physically work on your body to be able to go and compete. Nowadays, they sit in front of video games all day long and then expect to go out on the court because they're handed so much money. When I was playing in the 90s, the highest paid player was David Robinson, which back then was the $6 million man. They made a big stink about that. And what Michael only made, $2 million. He was making $2.7 million back then. So the money didn't start until 97 when a good friend of mine, Jahan Howard and Glenn Big Dog Robinson, local guys here, came out, did really well in college, and they commanded the $100 million contracts. So at that time, you saw the change of what the NBA was doing. And that's good for them. But I just wish they would have had some of the money for us, because I was the first one to have, what, 8 3-pointers, I think, in the game. Yeah, 8 or 9 in the game at one point. Then Kobe, then Gilbert Arenas, and other professionals slaughtered that. I was a career 39% shooter. A 39% shooter now is making $50 million.
Wow, that's crazy. So let me ask you this question. What advice would you give to the kids out there that have dreams and aspirations to be pro players and not fantasize necessarily the money, but focus on the other variables that you did to make you as great as you are today?
Dedication. Be dedicated to your craft. if you want to be a basketball player, put in the work, put in the hours. Nothing's promised. You have to really physically, mentally be strong. Mm. And if you, it starts with your mental first. A lot of these kids now, they think it's all athletics. It's reversed. It's 80% mental, 20% athletics. And when you get that and you understand that, now you can set yourself up to be successful. Hmm. But a lot of us athletes have it turned around. They think it's all, just because I can jump, I can dunk, and I can handle the basketball, I'm going to make it and have a long career. Those are the same athletes who think that are the ones that are not getting the opportunities, are the ones who are knuckleheads, are the ones who are not, they're not on display because of whatever reason. It's because you think your shit doesn't stink, excuse my language.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean? So you walk around with a chip on your shoulder and thinking you're God's gift, but you're not working on your game. But now you have a mediocre player that works on his skill, and he's playing. And the NBA has shown that over, I think, over the last several years. Matter of fact, and this is fact, there's more no-name players that don't come from big-name colleges, the North Carolinas, the Dukes, the Illinois, that are in the league now that come from smaller colleges, mid-majors, are getting the opportunity because why? They're working their work ethic.
They're fighting.
They're fighting. They don't think they're cool. You can't be cool if you want to be an athlete.
Right.
You have to get dirty. You have to be able to do what others won't do.
Yeah.
While others are partying, you have to be at home getting your rest. You have to be working on your game, not being out in the streets at the club.
Let me ask you this question, because mindset is, it's such a powerful thing. Mm-hmm. I hear a lot of ego, too, can really get in the way when you have skills, right? So you build on this mindset, you get pro, right? Mm-hmm. You play phenomenal, and then it's done, right? You move on, and life goes on. What are some of the things that you've done focusing on mindset and pivoting to continue to be successful in all the other realms? To provide, because at some point the money runs out, right?
Yeah. And that's an interesting, a good question. Because as an athlete, we're robots. We're trained. We're in the system. So even myself, when I retired, the first 7 years, I didn't do anything. Everything was going out. Nothing was coming in. I sat around the house. Then all of a sudden, as you notice that you don't have the same money, now you're trying to get into things, and then you're rushing to try to make moves, and they're bad moves because we're not, again, educated. And we're not educated on money. And I'm speaking from experience, and I have no problem telling what a lot of us are afraid to say, that we do go broke. We do not know financial literacy. Is there help? We want, all of us, when we talk, we want help, but we're afraid to ask for help. Why? I do not know.
That ego, man.
Yes, it's our ego.
Well,
it's our competitive.
So you're a very small percentage of this, being a part of this community that you're in, and you're awesome, and you have all this talent, and you're a star, right? And then you don't want to admit that you're not good at something else. I bet that's got to be hard to admit to yourself.
No, you're absolutely right, because it's the shame button. It's the shame button. Yes, we made money. But really, do you know how much money we made? Or the money that we made, do we really know the concept of that money? And I'll give you an example. I got a signing bonus. First thing I did, went out and bought me a Mercedes.
I was going to say, did you buy a car?
Yeah. I went out and bought an S500 gray. And my friends, my people will tell you this, that gray S500 Mercedes, dressed it up, put the rims on it. For what? And went and got a house. Now, I thought the house was mine, but it turned out it wasn't because I didn't know. So I'm paying every month into a house that I thought was mine because the owner, realtor, oh, this is your house. We're going to take this money out of your check. Okay, fine. It's my house.
Yeah.
But the minute they trade you, it's not your house.
Wow.
You're on to the next city. So then it just so happened I end up getting traded back to this one team. I go back. Someone else is living in that house.
Wow. Yeah. Like, see, you get burned along the way. So it gets harder and harder to ask.
And then
you don't trust anybody at this point.
Don't trust, and then you don't know. And we as athletes, because again, we're focused on our craft. Yes, we have a lot of ample time. But what are we doing with that ample time is the key, because we're not asking for help. We're not asking for education. We're just resting. Mm-hmm. And when someone asks for something, hey, we're giving them the money. Hey, just go do it. We're putting our trust in them. But they don't know what to do. They're just out spending your money. It's not their money. They're spending your money.
So what did you do to change that path into something positive and take control of your finances?
I had to go broke. And then I realized my mindset that, okay, wait a minute. I'm going to stop the water. Let me plug this hole up for a second and reinvent myself. Because if you can make it to my motto is if I made it to the NBA, which was the hardest thing to do in my life, I could do anything else. So at that time, I retired in 2002. I didn't know what to do. I was staying up late. Saw government contracting. I caught the bus from here to D.C., Virginia, actually. Went to the government seminars. Stayed there for 2 weeks learning government contracting. Learning the beginning of it. And in 2009, I started a medical supply company, and I was awarded 4 government contracts. At that time, I was so proud of myself, I ended up having a warehouse out south, full of catheters, Rolaters. I had a contract with Heinz VA.
Okay.
But the thing that I did wrong was hiring my friends.
Oh, yeah.
Because I didn't know.
Yeah.
I wanted to try to help everyone. But
because you're used to that, I'm assuming, from playing pro ball, where
exactly.
You're
bring the ones that are close to me.
Yeah, of course.
But then when I would come in and we need to have 100 Rolaters shipped out to the VA or to people that were buying them, 10 Rolaters need to go out, my friends were sitting in the warehouse smoking cigarettes and not working. So now I'm behind on my delivery. The patients need their Rolaters. Hey, guys, we'll get to it. That's okay, we'll do it. No, this is supposed to have been done. So after going through that and realizing that, man, I got to do something different. I don't want to be broke. I'm trying to do something. I got awarded this contract. Let me fulfill these contracts. Let me do what's right. And let me implement and get the right people behind me. I started continually to educate. Man, I'm going to do something else. I got 5 fingers. So each one of these fingers going to do something.
So you invested in your mindset.
Yeah, I invested in my mindset. And
got educated. That's smart.
I got educated on that. That lasted for a couple years. And then I had an opportunity to go into importing, exporting.
Okay.
Out of Miami. A friend of one of the head coach down there invited me down there. And we started. He actually was leaving the business. His wife had passed.
Okay.
And he didn't want the shipping business to go to drain. Me being one of his favorite players, he brought me in asked me if I wanted to learn it. I told him, yeah, I wasn't doing anything in Chicago.
Yeah.
So I packed up, I got down there, and I lived down there from 2013 through 18 doing shipping. And I ended up buying my first container ship vessel, a 800-ton vessel in 2014.
Cool.
Very successful in the Latin American market and transportation. In 2016, I upgraded that vessel to a 3,000
ton. So you went from a Mercedes to a vessel.
To a vessel.
I like it.
And at that point, I started getting contracts country to country. So
cool.
I was delivering supplies and goods from the U.S., to these third world countries, because these countries rely on import.
Yeah.
We in America don't, because things are made here. We can go to the store and buy a couch, a TV. These third world countries, they don't have the wherewithal. They have very intelligent people, but because of their economy, they're lacking.
Yeah.
So I saw that and I said, man, I could help these other countries, help these people.
That's great.
Then I started delivering to Colombia, delivering gas, LNG gas and propane gas to Barranquilla, Nicaragua, transporting cement from Dominican Republic to some of these islands that were ravaged by the hurricanes. Mm. And they started rebuilding. Then along the way, my shipping vessel, my company, which was LACIM, it was Cam and Sinem Logistics. Then with my new vessel, I had LACIM Maritime Corporation. We started doing very well with a past performance ratio of A1. That means none of my deliveries or cargo was late.
Wow, that's great.
We were on time for everything. So I got a past performance rating of very well. And I end up getting a huge contract with the government now, the U.S. and Cuba government. But the caveat to that is that you have to have a newer ship. My ship, the 3000, was a 1976 ship, which was
like— upgrade.
Yeah.
You got to upgrade.
And
yeah.
So I'm in the process now.
I've
been waiting after the pandemic slowed everything down, completely wiped a lot of things, but the government actually renewed my license and I'm just waiting now so I could continue that journey.
So through this whole journey that you've described with us today, it does sound like an athlete's mindset, because you've conquered amazing things, but only because you kept going and you didn't take no for an answer. You were humble. You asked for forgiveness, but then you fell. And through that falling, you're actually contributing to providing a lifestyle to countries that don't have it otherwise, because you kept going.
Yeah.
How do people follow you so that they can continue to hear more about your journey and support you? And
I'm on Instagram, Facebook. I'm in the process of revamping both, because one of the main things that has been steady is real estate. I'm full-time now. I still will do my import-exporting, because that's a corporation that we know.
Mm-hmm.
And once I put the pieces together to garner that and attack that angle of what I need to get that business back going with Cuba and the U.S. with all the agricultural products, then I'll obtain a ship and start that up. But real estate is where I'm at right now. Been doing that. Did it before I got dabbled into the other things. When real estate went bad, that's when I jumped into the other things.
So you're going full throttle now.
Oh.
Great.
100%, because real estate is the only main thing that's steady increasing.
Yes.
And can leave you the legacy that you want and create the wealth that you need. So but you have to educate yourself, because me being an investor from 2004 and through 2008, and having seven single-family homes, five single-family homes, seven multifamily, small one through four units in Chicagoland, then going through what we went through but not just me, just the economy, everyone went through that, wishing all along that I would have still had those properties now.
Yeah.
Would have made a huge difference. But it's lack of education.
Yeah. It's mindset.
It's your mindset.
Yeah.
So I'm full educating myself, learning. And the fun thing about real estate, let me say this, is it's consistent learning. So put trust in yourself, not in others, and you'll be okay.
So from Mercedes to vessels and now to real estate, I can't wait to see what 2024 brings. And I really appreciate you sharing your story and mission. It's been an honor.
Thank you for having me. I have a vision of wanting to help people, and I especially want to help my other athletes so we can stop the bleeding and stop being the laughing stock of losing our money. Let's protect our money, protect our future, protect our family,
yeah,
and create wealth.
Yes.
And I'm here to help educate you and point you in the right direction, because in the end, it's not what we do for ourselves, is what we do for others. That's what we judge by.
That's right. It's what you do off the court.
Absolutely.
That matters most.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you.